Well, as you heard, Sir Larry Gentle thinks the world of fellow crime writer Robert Gott, so let's meet him. And it's a good time to be talking to Bob because he's got a new book out. It's the fourth in his Will Power series. It's called The Serpent's Sting, and it's a story of crime, bungling, cross-dressing and sexual hijinks set in Melbourne during WW2 in the year 1942. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's great to be here.
So we've just been listening to Sarah Foster and Sir Larry Gentle. Sir Larry singing your praises there.
Oh, Michael, Sir Larry is only human.
A woman of impeccable judgment. Apart from her praise for you, did what they had to say about crime fiction resonate with you?
Yes, particularly the way Sir Larry writes her crime fiction, because I write it in a very similar way. I don't religiously plot. I let the story unfold rather than unravel, because I don't want to know what the ending is. I want to start out writing a novel being completely unsure.
Oh, you don't know either?
No, I have no idea. I have the vaguest of idea about where I want the novel to go. And as I write whodunits, I'm kind of making a cross for my own back in writing it that way, but that's the way I love to write. Just sit down, pick up a pencil.
Oh, you write in pencil?
I do. I write with one of those continuous pencils.
When you run out of lead, the book is finished.
No, but this is how I know to keep control of the rhythm of a book. I use Moleskine or Moleskine notebooks, however you pronounce that, and the A4 notebooks. And I know that 2.5 of those notebooks is 82,000 words. So wherever I am in writing, I know exactly where I am in relation to where the novel needs to end. And I know that's eccentric, but that's the way it is.
So this is the fourth Will Power book. For those who came in late, remind us who this Nong is.
Will Power is an actor and private investigator, or private inquiry agent, as they were called. He's a bad actor. He's a bad private inquiry agent. He's a bad everything. He's incompetent in every field that he attempts.
Well, it turns out he's got a bit of a flair for doing children's pantomime, which is what we find him doing this time. He's playing the, what's it called, the dame role.
The dame in Mother Goose, yes. Mm. And he just thinks it's a humiliating sideshow to the war, because World War II is all about Will. And yeah, he finds himself on stage at the Princess Theatre in Melbourne in 1942, playing the role, the lead role, by a series of accidents, of the dame. So he's in full dame drag when he's not naked. He spends a lot of the book naked. That just sort of happens.
Yeah, well, you do like naked things one way or another. For those of you who live in Melbourne, you might know that Robert Gott also draws the Naked Man cartoon in The Age once a week, and he's been doing that for decades. So he's got form. So halfway through the novel, we discover that John Gilbert is dead. Who's he?
John Gilbert is the son of his mother, who Will refers to as his mother's paramour. It's actually his mother's long-standing fiancé, with whom Will has a very poor relationship, not because Mr. Gilbert is a bad man, but because Will has got no idea how to judge other people's characters. It's one of his appealing flaws.
And yet he regards himself as the perfect fellow to solve a crime.
Of course he does, because he has an overinflated sense of his own abilities. He's an actor, Michael.
So he has become rather awkwardly entangled with Geraldine, known as Jerry Buchanan, who is a fellow thespian.
And getting involved with her is another example of his very poor judgment when it comes to character.
It turns out that, like you, Geraldine can draw.
Geraldine can draw, and she draws Will's portrait, and he's so flattered that they have sex. And Will, in all of my novels with Will, he gets embroiled accidentally because of his own incompetence.
Well, yes, incompetently he gets embroiled.
Correct. In crimes.
Which he sort of has to solve because everything points to him being the perpetrator.
Yes, he's always, because he's right at the centre of this, because of his incompetence, he's always number one suspect.
Yeah.
And so the only way to get out of it is for him to solve it. But he never solves it. Other people solve it.
Yeah.
100% of the time other people solve it. And he just stumbles through, and at the end he imagines he's solved it.
This is such a bizarre idea for a book, isn't it, really? I mean, you've got a central character who's no good at what he does and never actually achieves in the outcome that he's set for himself.
No, but he is a man without malice. He's quite He's quite witty. I think he's quite witty. I hope that the novel is, and the whole series is, amusing. That's my only intention, to make it amusing.
When you say he's a man without malice, His wit often turns on seeing people in an uncharitable light. I mean, there is one moment when he says to his brother Brian, "You should never underestimate the stupidity of other people," for example.
Well, that strikes me as quite a wise observation, Michael.
On RN, this is Books and Arts with Michael Cathcart. And my guest is Robert Gott, talking about crime fiction and his own new book, The Serpent's Sting, another William Power fiasco, it says on the front cover.
Just in relation to that question, I think that everyone knows at least six people who are really, really stupid. And if you don't know six people, you're probably number six on someone else's list.
So this is a sort of realism, really, a sort of, yes, honesty about the human condition.
Yes, yes. Will sometimes gets it right.
Now, you've written two more serious crime fiction novels, along with these four more amusing ones. These are The Holiday Murders and The Port Fairy Murders, and they're hard-boiled and rather brutal books, and far more unsettling because we're face-to-face with sadism and the kind of terrible, unhinged cruelty and hatred that drives terrorists and totalitarian political movements. And those books have won you a lot of praise. Can you talk about the differences between the two sets of books? What mood are you in when you write for one as opposed to the other?
Well, this is an enterprise that came to me by accident. Both books are set in exactly the same period. So they're set in the 1940s, and they're both set in some of the books in the same place, in Melbourne. The Will Power novels create a comic world that is nevertheless rooted in good historical research. The Homicide Murders, which are set in the Melbourne Homicide Department, which became a discrete unit only in 1942, those books are very dark and apparently, people tell me, brutal. And that world and Will Power's world exist side by side in my head. But Will Power could never step across into the world of Joe Sable, who's the detective in the Homicide novels. So there's a comic world and a dark, brutal world.
It's actually a different Melbourne, isn't it?
It's a different Melbourne.
Because the Melbourne of the darker books is actually a brutal place.
Yes.
As a city often is in hard-boiled crime fiction, you can't walk the streets at night without risk. Whereas in the Will Power books, people are basically going about their everyday life with their normal innocence.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some crimes occur, and it's Will who's at risk, whereas the rest of us are pretty much safe to go on as we were.
Pretty safe. But I quite like the idea that the Collins Street that Will Power walks down cannot be the same Collins Street that Joe Sable walks down. They could never pass each other in the street. These are worlds that occupy different parts of my creative writing. Mm. And it just sets me a little challenge that each time I write a book from each series, I have to change the way I think when I'm writing.
Bob, you and I know each other well. We've known each other for a long time. And what I know about you is that you are an extremely well-read person. You've read a lot of, I guess, what you'd call high fiction. When it comes to crime, who do you look to as a fellow practitioner who sort of shows you the way?
I don't really read much crime. I would return the favour to Solari, Gentle. I do read Solari's books. I like James N. Cain. He's probably my crime writing hero. And I'm interested in the fact that Raymond Chandler, for example, couldn't stand James N. Cain's writing. He hated it because he thought it was immoral. But that's because Chandler is a bit of a prude.
So what sort of stories does James N. Cain write?
The Postman Always Rings Twice, Double Indemnity. And if you've read The Postman Always Rings Twice, there are some extraordinary scenes in that, considering when it was written. And there's one in particular that just made me sit bolt upright, where two people have a car accident and they find the consequential injuries and blood eroticising and make love. And this book was published in the 1930s, and it's really extraordinary and dark. And I like it.
So that perverse side of people, their capacity for cruelty, for seeing the world in ways that calls into question our comfortable, smaller, liberal views or values, you're drawn to that, aren't you?
I'm not actually drawn to it in the way I live my life. I'm drawn to it in fiction because I live such a safe and comfortable life. And I think that's why people read crime fiction. It takes them out of their safe, comfortable armchair with a glass of wine into a world that they would never enter. If you actually lived in that world, I think the last thing you'd want to do is read about it.
So you don't feel as though you live in a world of threat and peril?
No, not at all. On the contrary, I live in a safe, comfortable world.
And what's drawn you then to write the kind of literature that you don't by preference read?
Because I have such admiration for the great masters and mistresses of the English novel, particularly people like Dickens and Wilkie Collins and Jane Austen and the Brontes and that crowd of 19th century writers. I'm stuck in the 19th century, essentially. I figured, I cannot do that. And it's not that crime writing is easy, because it isn't. But I found, just by accident, that I'm pretty good at plotting.
Well, I suppose life is like this. You find that you're good at something. I'm just reading Aravinda Diga's book, which is about cricket, and I was reflecting on the fact that some people are good at bowling and some people are good at batting and some people are good at fielding. It seems weird to me. You think you'd just be good at cricket. But actually, our skill set are quite specific, aren't they? And you've discovered that you can write crime fiction.
Yeah, just by accident. And just because I'm one of those people who didn't so much want to write a crime novel as to have written a crime novel. But to do that, I had to actually write a crime novel. And in my very first one, I won't go into what the story was, but in my very first crime novel, I had the core of a really good idea that I grew up knowing about from my childhood. And I also write because I find it hugely entertaining. I get impatient with people who say that writing is agony. Well, you know, be a plumber. Do something else.
Now, you're pretty happy. Happy with the way it's all turned out. Robert Gott's book is called The Serpent Sting. It's published by Scribe, and it's a hoot. I really recommend it. On RN, this is Books and Arts.